Hello, kiddies. This is the Crypt Keeper, and you're listening to Uncle Josh's True Scary Stories. Be careful what you ask for. You may get it.
The House, submitted by Jason T. When I was in my early 20s, my friends and I would go to a lot of concerts at this venue that was kind of out in the boondocks. Getting in and out was always a pain in the ass, as the system of parking was kind of crazy. We always complained about it, and one day a mutual friend told my friend Toby and I that there was an abandoned house not too far away from the venue. He told us that he had parked there a lot, and if it was not raining, you could just walk through some fields and end up in the parking lot of the place. After any concert, he would just walk back through the field, get into his car, and get on the road. We were going to a very popular band that I'm not going to name, and I asked Toby maybe we should try this. We were going to take our girlfriends, and to make sure that it was legit, we went out a couple of days before the show to scope out the entire scene. And our buddy wasn't lying. There was an abandoned house not too far, maybe a quarter of a mile walk through some grassland, that led right to the parking lot of the venue. We high-fived and said, "This is a great place, and we won't have to worry about waiting in line to get in or get out." We even found a spot to park where we could tailgate before the show. Funny thing is, we didn't bother looking in the house, which we probably should have, and would have caused us a heck of a lot of less trauma. But we were too excited about having a spot to chill before meeting up with friends in the main parking lot for some more tailgating, knowing that we were going to have an easy way to get back home after the show. I drove my car out to the spot, and we set up a grill, we threw a frisbee around, and just had some pre-concert beverages and enjoyed an afternoon. A couple of hours before showtime, we got everything cleaned up and made our way over to see our friends in the main parking lot. Easy peasy. Walking through the grass was a snap, and we kept talking about how awesome this was, but how we also needed to keep it hush-hush so other people wouldn't try doing it. In the back of my mind, I also knew that what we were doing was highly illegal, as this was not our property, and we were probably not supposed to be out there. But, oh well, such is the folly of youth. We had a great time with our friends, and the show was spectacular. Afterwards, we hung out for a little while and then made our way back to the abandoned house where my car was. This is where things get freaky. We got to my car and everything was fine, but Toby noticed there was a light on in the house. And I immediately thought, oh shit, someone's here and we're all in deep trouble. I thought maybe we should knock on the door and apologize to whoever was inside and maybe give them some money for being idiots and parking on their property without asking permission. I grabbed a 20 from my wallet and Toby gave me one too, and we walked up to the front door. He knocked and we waited, and nothing happened. But then the light that was on in the upstairs room turned off. We knocked again and called out, "Hello, is there anyone home? We're sorry for disturbing you. We'd like to apologize." No response. So, being a few more than a couple of beverages deep, Toby turned the knob on the front door, and it swung open. We went inside and called out again, "Hello, is there anyone home? We're sorry to disturb you." It was dark and I turned on the flashlight of my cell phone. I showed it around in the room the door opened into, and there were nothing but 5 or 6 mannequins. Man, it was really creepy. I called out again, "Hello?" And we thought we heard someone upstairs. The floorboards were creaking. I went back to the staircase where the front door was and looked into another room, and it also had a bunch of mannequins. I mean, I need to stress that they weren't just standing up. There were mannequins sitting in chairs, there were mannequins looking out the windows, and I kick myself to this day for not taking pictures, but we were so creeped out, we wanted to just get the heck out of there. I yelled out that I was going to leave the $40 on the floor and that we were sorry to disturb anyone who might be there. And that's when we heard a door smash open upstairs, and footsteps come running downstairs. However, it wasn't the staircase that we were at. It sounded like a staircase that was in the back of the house. In the light of my cell phone flashlight, we saw a guy with really long hair, a pair of jean shorts and no shirt come into the living room we were standing next to. He had a bat in his hands and a crazy look on his face. I kind of thought he was frothing at the mouth, to be honest. Without one word to us, he started smashing all the mannequins apart with the bat. Toby just yelled out, "Oh shit!" and we started to back up to leave the house. I grabbed his arm as the guy ran through some rooms in the back that we obviously hadn't seen, and then he started smashing the mannequins in the other room. He then stopped, looked up at us, and said, "You need a room for the night?" He was standing there sweating and panting, and like I said, it looked like he was frothing at the mouth. We just said, "No, we left you some money. Sorry about all this." And we ran out to my car, jumped in, and hauled ass out of there. I looked back, and I could see the guy standing in the doorway with lights that were now on in the house. He didn't chase us, and he didn't come after us with an axe or anything like that. We knew we had screwed up, and we just wanted to get out of there. Our girlfriends were wondering what the heck had happened, and we told them as we drove home. Jump to 10 years later. Toby and I were still friends and going to see another concert at the same venue. This time we were by ourselves as our girlfriends were now our wives and they were taking care of the kids and didn't have any desire to see the same band that we had dragged them to a bunch of times. Being smarter adults, we parked in the main lot and had a great time at the show and were gearing up to be waiting in line to get out of the place, knowing we both had to go to work in the morning. Toby looked at me and said, "Hey, rather than just sit here, we should go back and check out that house." I told him he was crazy, but he convinced me that we should go and look to see if anything had changed. Knowing that there was not going to be much to do other than sit around and have another beer or two before the lot started to empty and people could actually get back on the highway, I said, "What the hell, let's go see." We walked through the grass the same way that we had done before, and there, lo and behold, was the same house. It looked exactly like it had years ago. Toby said we should go inside, and I said, "No way, man." So instead, we just kind of went up to the windows of the living room we so long ago had seen a guy smashing mannequins apart with a bat. I again turned on the flashlight of my cell phone, and I kid you not, the room was full of mannequins again. Whatever happened to the other ones, I have no idea. There was no mess or shattered remains. I mean, it had been 10 years. But there were just more mannequins standing and sitting in the room. Being as curious as I was, I ran around to the other room where we saw the other mannequins the last time, and it was the same thing. More mannequins. I said to Toby, "We really need to get out of here, man. I'm totally creeped out." He agreed, and as we were walking off the property back to the grass field between the venue and this place, we heard a scream come from the house and saw the upstairs lights go on. We didn't stick around to see what was going to happen. We just hauled ass back through the grass to my car and grabbed a beer, totally freaking out. Neither of us has been back to that house. I have no idea who that guy was. I have no idea why our friend thought it was abandoned when it clearly wasn't. And I have no idea why the person who lived there had all those mannequins set up. And it was really, really creepy. We just sat there calming down and sipping a beer waiting to hit the road. Toby brought something up that I had never thought about. The time that we were out there with our girlfriends, was someone sitting in the house watching us while we were just tailgating, waiting for the show to start and see our other friends? I mean, to me, that's just as weird as all those mannequins and a guy who looked clearly out of his mind smashing them to pieces with a bat in front of us. I can only thank the Lord that that's all that happened to us and that we got out of there safely both times. Family Cabin, submitted by Keep It Real Keel. My name is Keel. Yeah, that's my real name. My grandparents were from England. I know it's unusual, but I'm proud of it, and I like it, and it has nothing to do with this story. My family owned a cabin in an extremely remote part of upstate New York. Even if I told you where it was and gave you directions, you probably would never find it. It's a great retreat for our family, and we like to spend as much time there as possible, even though I'm now a grown man with kids of my own. To get to it, you have to take a road that doesn't even have a name. It's just one of those route so-and-sos. and at an intersection where there's no light and just stop signs, there's a general store in front of it. You take a dirt road to the right that winds up through the hills up to where our place is. When I was growing up, there were a lot of other people who had cabins there. But for whatever reason, they all stopped going in the 90s and 2000s when I was spending a lot of time there as a young adult. The places are still used and were used at the time as hunting lodges, but no one was really out there outside of hunting season anymore. This story is about a time that my best friend Mark and I took our girlfriends Kelly and Monica up to our cabin for a long weekend. We got all our stuff together and made the hour-long drive out to the middle of nowhere. Once we got there, the girls got bathing suits on and went to the edge of the pond, which sits right at the front of our cabin. There's a little bit of what I would call a beach, but nothing like when you go to the ocean. Just some sand and rocks, you know, a place to lie out in the sun. Mark and I checked the generator and got the rest of our things set up that we needed to. Lots of unloading coolers and so. I need to point out that our cabin is elevated from the road that you take to get to it, so it's about a half mile down our private road to the dirt road that takes you back to the general store. We were hanging out on a Thursday afternoon, just having fun in the sun. We all decided to take time off from our summer jobs and just hang out and enjoy our company, knowing that in another month and a half we would be going back to college. As I mentioned, it's a very hard place to find, so seeing or hearing other vehicles or people is extremely rare. Mark and I were having a beer and talking baseball when I saw a white vehicle driving down the dirt road. At first, I didn't think anything of it because, hey, it's a public road and everyone has access to it. And it also led to some other fire roads down the way where I know people sometimes went camping. But about 20 minutes later, the same vehicle was driving back the other direction towards the little hamlet where the general store was. Again, I mentioned it to Mark, but, I mean, who knows? Somebody out for a drive or somebody's camping out there. No big deal. Who cares? It was getting on in the evening, and we decided to grill some steaks, and the girls wanted to get cleaned up. And to be honest, I cannot believe how big of troopers they were having to wash in the pond with biodegradable soap. I mean, no running water out there. Their only stipulation was that we couldn't watch. And ha ha ha, of course we did. We're guys. We're pigs. It was at that point when I was grilling that I looked over the girls in the pond and saw the same white vehicle slowly going down the road. I grabbed a pair of binoculars we always kept in the front of the cabin to look out at birds and whatnot, and I got a glimpse of the truck just in time before it went behind some trees. It was one of those old Ford Broncos, like the one OJ made his famous drive-in. I mentioned it to Mark, and he said, yeah, it's probably somebody who's just coming back from the general store. But something in my stomach told me that maybe something else was going on. I didn't want to jump to conclusions and freak anybody out, though. We made dinner and had a really good time, just talking and planning out a campfire. I mean, even back then, I was part of the campfire crew. Mark and I had a couple of beers, and the girls were drinking some wine, when I happened to look up and saw the truck driving in the opposite direction that it had come from before earlier. Again, I grabbed the binoculars, and it was the same Ford Bronco driving the other way, slowly. Now I was starting to think something was up. I mean, yeah, maybe it was some campers that kept forgetting supplies and were going to that little general store. But it seems odd that I'd seen that same Bronco that many times in the afternoon and not one other car. I didn't say anything to anyone, and the night wore on and we all were just listening to music and enjoying the fire. Eventually, we all got tired and decided to hit the hay and let the fire burn down, and everyone went inside and got ready for bed. I would have to say it was about 4 in the morning that I woke up, which is not much earlier than I normally would get up back then. I was working construction and was usually up by 5:30. For whatever reason, I thought I would go out and get some air and sneaked out of bed without waking up Monica. I walked as quietly as I could so as to not wake up Mark and Kelly, and I went out onto the porch. I was looking off to the east over the pond and was wondering when the sun was going to start to rise. I've always liked sunrises and thought if this is a good one, I would wake up Monica and we could just have coffee and watch the sun. I was, however, not looking off to my right and the west. Eventually, I did kind of pan over there. And there on our private road was the white Bronco. Whoever was inside obviously noticed me because they turned on the lights, started it up, and started backing down our road. For a minute, I didn't know what to do. But then I backed up inside, reached to the side of the front door with my left arm, and grabbed my Benelli. Without making much sound, I went back onto the porch, listening to this truck back up. I thought for a moment about walking up the road to make sure that whoever it was getting out of here, but a cooler head prevailed, not knowing who the fuck was in that truck. I waited for a few minutes, and then saw the lights of the truck heading back down to the little hamlet, down the dirt road. Again, I didn't say anything to anyone, and went back inside and started making coffee. I didn't want anyone to be afraid, but inside I was a little uneasy about some strange truck coming down our private road who obviously knew that we were there. After everyone had started breakfast, I made some lame excuse that I had to run to the general store and said I would be right back. I drove down and went inside and asked the proprietor, who had been there since the Stone Age, if he had seen a white Bronco in the little hamlet. He said he had, and I asked if the driver had been in to buy any supplies, and he said no, but I've just seen it driving by a whole lot. Then he asked why, and I let him know about what had happened. He turned around and slid a box of slugs over to me and said, "On the house," with a smile. I know he knew I wasn't going to shoot anybody, but his kind attitude made me feel good. I bought a couple of things and said I'd probably be back in another day or so, and that he was more than welcome to come up and visit if he wanted to. Nothing happened the rest of that morning, and we were just enjoying ourselves, lying in the sun, trying to catch the non-existent fish in our pond, and having a great time. I still didn't mention the truck to anyone. That afternoon, we were all having a swim, and I got out to go grab a couple of beers from the cooler on the porch of the cabin. When I turned around, of course, what do I see? The white Bronco driving down the road towards the other fire roads down the way. And now I was starting to get nervous and a little bit angry. I asked Mark if he wanted to go for a walk up to the road with me, and he said sure. The girls were just going to continue lying in the sun and getting tan. No one asked why I slung my Benelli over my shoulder. I think most of them were used to me doing that if they'd been out here with me before. I mean, Monica certainly was, and so was Mark. Kelly didn't say anything anyway. As we walked the half mile or so down to the dirt road, I told Mark what I had seen the night before and asked him if we might consider not staying. He said no, maybe it was a guy who was just lost and didn't know what was going on, and maybe he was confused. Which I suppose is an okay thought. But why would he be up in front of the cabin with the engine and lights off if he were lost? I mean, wouldn't most people have just come up to the cabin and asked for directions to get out of there? We finally got down to the road and were standing there just talking about being safe, and if anything crazy happened, what our exit plan was. That's when we heard a vehicle coming. I told him we needed to fade up our private road and stand on the edges where the tall grass was. We did, and shortly after, that same white Bronco came slowly driving by. It slowed a little bit in front of our private road, but then continued on back towards the little hamlet. I immediately closed our heavy gate at the road. When we were out there, I usually left it open because it is heavy and it's kind of a pain in the ass to unlock and lock and hook up and unhook it. But now after seeing that fucking Bronco, I decided it was a good idea. Mark said maybe we should tell the state police what was going on, and I said, if this guy comes back again, I will do that. But I didn't want anyone staying up there by themselves or asking someone to go to the closest substation to do that. I was just hoping the truck wouldn't come back, and we could enjoy the rest of our weekend. We were staying until Monday, and it was only Friday. We both decided to not say anything to the girls and just make the best of the rest of the weekend. The rest of that day was having a blast, so was the next day. I didn't see the Bronco again, and I had to add I was kind of making it a priority to look up at the road every chance that I got. No one came back up to the cabin as they obviously couldn't get through the gate. On Saturday afternoon, the girls wanted to go to a vineyard not too far from where we were to buy some more wine and do some shopping in a gift shop. We all piled into my truck and left for some girl stuff. We spent an hour or so wandering around the gift shop and then made our way back to the cabin. I remember Mark asking if I had closed the gate or not. And I had, but I hadn't locked it. When we pulled up, the gate was open. Without saying a word, Mark and I looked at each other, and we kind of gave each other that glance as if something's about to go down, we're in this together. The girls were too busy chatting to notice anything. When we got back up to the hill to the cabin, there was no one and no Bronco there. But I was still uneasy. We played some cards, and Monica could tell something was wrong after dinner, as I was obviously preoccupied with thinking about who was in that truck, why they were bothering us, and had they been in the cabin? We had another campfire that night, and as the night wore on, everyone was slowly falling asleep in their camp chairs after a couple of beers and a couple of glasses of wine. It was very peaceful out, and the stars were out doing their thing in full force. Super beautiful, but still butterflies in my stomach that something was wrong. Everyone started to get ready to go back inside, and I saw lights down on the dirt road. It doesn't take Einstein to put the connections together to know that it was the Bronco again. It was driving faster than it had been before, but then after a few minutes it came back going the other way, then did the same thing. It was a total of 3 trips. Everyone went into the cabin, and I told Mark to stay there and that I was going to go down and check on the gate. I didn't want the girls to be left by themselves if something was going to go on. And of course, we didn't say anything to them. We didn't want them to be scared. I grabbed my Benelli and a flashlight and walked down to the gate. The truth is that after we had gotten back, I knew that I had locked the gate, but I was going to stand there for a little while to see if that Bronco came back. Yep, it did come back. I was standing at one of the posts of our gate when I heard the sound of the tires coming. There was a little ditch on one side of our road to the cabin, and I hopped down into it despite there being a little bit of mucky water. In short time, the Bronco slowly came by our gate and slowed down even more. It almost came to a complete stop, and I jumped out of the ditch with my Benelli across my chest and yelled, "Who the fuck are you?" I thought whoever it was would immediately speed away, but the Bronco actually came to a stop and just sat there. The window was up, and I couldn't see inside at all. Finally, the window came down a little, but in the darkness, I couldn't see who was at the wheel. All I heard was a deep voice say that, "Those are some fine-looking bitches you got." Then he hit the gas and sent up a spray of dirt and gravel and took off. I almost wanted to fire off a shot, but thought better of that. Shaking and pretty scared at this point, I made my way back to the cabin, went inside and washed my face and hands. Monica could tell something was wrong, and then I finally told everybody what had been going on. I wasn't sure if we should stay, but everyone said that they felt safer staying there until morning at least. Mark and I said that we would take shifts and watch over things for the rest of the night. Of course, the girls weren't going to get much sleep either, so we just made the best of it as we could. The next morning, however, I went out to my truck and saw that one of my tires was completely flat. I mean, I can't totally blame it on Bronco Guy, but nonetheless, it was flat. So it took me some time getting the spare from the bottom of my truck and changing the tire. Seeing as how it was now Sunday, we just decided to head home and call it a weekend. We had spent most of the night talking about how creepy all of this was, and no one really wanted to stay, I could tell. Personally, I kind of did because I wanted to have a showdown with whoever this guy was in the Bronco. And on the outside of things, I was 100% positive he was the reason that my tire was flat. We packed up and started to head home when I needed to get some gas, and we stopped at the only place for miles around. I started to fill up the tank, and as I was standing there, I happened to notice the white Bronco drive by on the main road. I was determined to find out who he was, and finished up with the gas, jumped behind the wheel, and sped out of the gas station in the direction of the Bronco. I eventually caught up with it, but kept a good distance between it. I didn't want whoever was driving it to think that I was following. It didn't take long for it to stop. It pulled over into the vineyard. It went behind the main building and into a barn, and I told everyone to wait in the truck and went inside the vineyard. They weren't really open yet, but there was a woman behind the counter. Angrily, I asked, "Who the hell owns that Bronco?" The woman was taken aback and said it was hers, but that she rarely drove it and always kept it in the barn behind the vineyard. She asked why, and how I even knew there was a Bronco there. I gave her the short version of what had happened, and she said, "That's impossible. That Bronco never leaves my barn. I'm the only one who has the keys." She turned around and opened a drawer and held up a set of keys. Her husband and son came in, and she told them what I had just told them. Her son was about 11, so we can't jump to conclusions that whoever was driving the Bronco was him, and it certainly wasn't her husband. He immediately ran out to the barn and then came back, grabbed the phone, and called the state police. Someone had been driving their vehicle, he said. They had no idea who, and no one was in the vehicle when he checked on it, but the engine was warm. State police came out, and the whole story was told more than once, and the family who owned the vineyard was flabbergasted. At first, I thought that the state trooper thought it was the man messing with us, but it became apparent very quickly that he had all of his time accounted for at the vineyard during the times I had seen the truck driving around. They had no idea that the truck had been leaving the barn. Tire tracks from the back of the barn were followed, and they went out a very old path that was rarely used by the vineyard folks that did get access back to the main road. Someone was going into their barn unbeknownst to them and driving their Bronco up and down the back roads, and obviously up to my family's cabin. After we told them what had been going on, the state trooper said they were going to be having to send out an investigative team and took all of our names and phone numbers and said they'd be in contact if they needed more information. He said there was nothing more that we could do at that point, and we were free to go. He did say that he was glad that we were all safe. The people at the vineyard were so shocked they gave us a case of wine and were sorry to hear that their vehicle had been causing us trouble. To this day, no one has ever found out who was driving that Bronco around. The state police never came up with any solid information, and the people who owned the vineyard put new locks on the barn where it was stored. The guy also went so far as to put giant steel bars between the doors, both in the front and back, so that they could only be removed with a different lock. Suffice it to say, we all went home pretty creeped out. I've been back up to the cabin dozens of times since this all happened, and I've been back to that vineyard. I've actually looked at the Bronco, but it has never left the property again, and I never see it driving around. As far as I know, the owners were actually going to sell it last year. If I go up this summer, I'll check. To whoever was in that Bronco stalking me and my friends, don't bother coming around anymore. The next time, I'm not going to hesitate to shoot. Abandoned Church, submitted by Paul. When I was a kid, I lived in rural Missouri. My friends and I would find ourselves walking down the train tracks that ran through our town. Truly dangerous, but when trains would come by, we would at least get off the tracks. We weren't that dumb. About a mile outside the town we lived in, there was this old church that was used when I was little, but for whatever reason fell into decay and was abandoned. One boring fall weekend, we decided to walk down the tracks and go check out the church. It was a late afternoon, and I remember that incredibly well as what we saw when we got there. All the stained glass windows were gone, and I'm assuming someone took them out because they weren't broken, they just weren't there. That's actually how we got into the church, as the front door still had big chains on them and was locked. The three of us climbed into the church, and it was really eerie. All of the pews were still there, all the hymnals and prayer books were still there, but it had this really funky odor like rotten wood. Obviously, the rain and dampness did a number on everything. As we were looking around, I walked up to the altar and saw that the baptismal bath thing was still there, as was the original woodwork and dais. There was some kind of dark, inky liquid in the baptismal thing, but I figured it was just mold. I went up onto the altar, and that's when my friend Jeff pointed over my head and said, "Oh, wow, look at that." I turned around, and the crucifix that was on the wall behind me was upside down and had been painted black. We all kind of stopped what we were doing and looked at it, knowing that something was very wrong here. There was a book on the dais, and I opened it. It had a bunch of symbols and words that I couldn't read, but it just added to the whole eeriness of the church. I actually thought about taking it, but Jeff said, "Don't do that." In typical fashion, it got really dark as a storm was coming. We could hear the thunder in the distance and knew we probably should get going. I don't know why, but we all got a feeling that at that point in time, we were not supposed to be there. Something was going on that just gave us that vibe that we should leave. I got down off the altar, and we were slowly making our way back to the window we'd come through, when a door opened behind us. We turned around to see two people in dark robes, kind of like Klan outfits, but black. They had hoods on with the eyes cut out. One of them pointed at us and shouted, "You are not welcome here. Do not come back." Then they started moving towards us. Of course, we scrambled out of that window as fast as we could and started running pell-mell down the train tracks back to town. We stopped once to look back, and in the distance saw the two figures in the robe standing at the edge of the train tracks, but they didn't come any further. We got home right before the rain, and I told my dad what we had seen. At first he just sat in his chair looking at us, and then in true 1970s dad fashion, didn't give a rat's ass about what we were talking about. He just yelled at us about going out there and how dangerous it was, and how if he found out we did it again, we were all dead. I never brought it up again, but my friends and I still talk about it on Facebook or whenever there's some sort of get-together that we see one another. I never jumped to the conclusion that there were Satanists or something out there, but those guys were obviously out there for some nefarious reason, and it had nothing to do with church as we knew it growing up. The church is long gone. I think someone set a light to it and it burned to the ground back in the early 90s. But I'll never forget being that scared when those guys came out from behind the altar. Disturbing discovery, submitted by It's Chris, Not Chris. I just discovered your channel, and I wanted to share a story from the 80s if I could. My two friends Ronnie and Bill loved to get into trouble. We were always sneaking into places we shouldn't have been. There was a junkyard at the edge of our town that we would always go exploring in and get chased out of by the owners, and any place that we could go that was out of bounds was the first places that we wanted to go. I suppose you could say that we were urban explorers, but out in the suburbs. Suburban explorers? Fine, I'll use that label. Bill's uncle had a piece of property way out in the sticks, and we decided to go out there and do what young guys do, get into trouble. We had some fireworks and thought we would go shoot them off where we were in an area that no one would complain about it. Speaking of junkyards, there was another piece of property that came up to his uncle's place where the guy who owned it had a whole bunch of old rusted out junk cars and trucks. It's funny, when I watch shows like American Pickers or whatever, I see the same sort of thing. Just tons of garbage, tons of junk, and a nice piece of land that I'm sure someone could have built a home on or used for any other type of recreational activity. So there we were on a hot summer day fooling around just being teenage boys. We were going to wait until dusk to shoot the fireworks off and had brought sandwiches and Pepsis for dinner. We ate and then Bill said, "Hey, let's go exploring." And we wandered over through the small group of trees to the property where all the junk cars and trucks were. All you could hear were the regular sounds of a field in the summer, you know, cicadas, crickets, birds, just the usual things. We poked around at the edge of the property to see if anyone was over there, but determined that no one was, because we could see a large chain across the gravel road from the main road that brought you to this vehicle graveyard. All three of us were poking around, just looking into the windows of the cars, pushing down the urge to smash the windshields and wreck things, as some young men will often be inclined to do. Honestly, there were some really neat old cars that were just rusted out beyond repair, but it was fun poking and prodding around, just looking at all the things that were there. I was looking at what I think was a Studebaker, and for whatever reason decided to see if I could look in the trunk. It was sort of sagging open, and I had to kind of pry it up with my hands. What I saw inside is what terrifies me to this day. There was a bunch of children's clothing in the trunk, and I mean little kid clothes for like 5 or 8 year olds. There was blood on a lot of them. That I was sure of. I know the difference between what blood that's dried looks like from rust. And it doesn't even matter. The fact that there was a whole bunch of little kids' underwear and clothing in this car in the middle of nowhere is scary. I yelled to my friends and they came over and looked in. All three of us were just looking at the stuff wide-eyed, and I said we should get the heck out of there and call the cops. They both agreed. Without shutting the trunk, we started to back up when we heard the sound of tires on gravel. I did my best to shut the trunk, and we turned around to see a truck coming up the road from the main road. We knew it had to be the guy who owned the property, or at least someone who had access to taking down the heavy chain that blocked the road. We dove into the trees where we had to go through to get back to Bill's uncle's property. Bill, however, stopped and turned around and said, "Let's see what happens." We kind of crouched down and watched a fairly new pickup drive up to where we had just been. Two guys got out, and I whispered to Bill, "Is this the guy that owns the place?" He shook his head and whispered back, "Oh, the guy who owns this place is really old. I have no idea who these guys are." Bill had been going out there with his uncle for a long time and certainly would have recognized someone had he seen them before. So we all sat there in silence as one of the guys yelled out, "What the fuck?" He walked over to the car trunk that we had just been standing at moments before and yelled out to the other guy, "We need to get rid of this stuff." As we looked at them, they looked like regular normal guys that we saw in our neighborhood, quite frankly, in our families. They both had on khaki pants and nice shirts, and they didn't look scraggly like you hear on all the other stories on YouTube. They honestly looked like two businessmen who stopped to look around. The other guy went back to the truck and got a big black garbage bag between the two of them. They threw all of the clothes that we had just looked at, and then started looking around the property. We thought for a lot of tense moments that they were going to either see us or hear us, but they didn't. After a little while, they got back into the truck and then sat there, probably because the air conditioning was on and it was hot as heck out that day. I motioned to my friends that we should slowly back up and then get back to Bill's uncle's property, and that's what we did. We got there and were debating about running to the police and letting them know what we had just seen. But we were also worried about being called trespassers and getting in trouble for being on someone else's property. That's when we heard tires on gravel again. We looked up, and coming up the little road to Bill's uncle's property where we were hanging out was the same red truck. The guys got out and said, "Hi, boys, how's it going?" None of us said anything for a few seconds. And finally, Bill said, "We're doing okay. Who are you?" One guy just laughed and said that they'd seen our car and thought that he would stop by and say hello. We said we were just waiting to shoot off some fireworks, and they said, "Well, have fun and be safe." They got back in the truck, backed up, turned around, and then drove back down the gravel road. That's when I noticed there were no license plates on the front or back of the truck. We waited there until we couldn't hear the truck anymore and decided that now it was time to leave. We got back on the road after putting up Bill's uncle's chain across the road, and then made for the closest sheriff's outpost. We were really kind of scared, and could not stop shaking and talking about what the heck was going on. I mean, who were those guys? Why were they out there? Why would they take those clothes out of that trunk? I mean, we just had nothing but questions. When we got to the sheriff's outpost, thankfully one was in, and we told him what we had seen, and he just shook his head. He got on the phone and made a call, then made another call, then called Bill's uncle. He was asking questions about who might have been out there, and then said he was going to go out and look for himself. At this point, I don't think he really believed our story. He told us to stay where we were and drove back to the property and was back in about 45 minutes. He said there was nothing out there, and the trunk of the car we had described had been shut. He also pried it up with his hands and looked inside, but there was nothing there. Here's the kicker. The man who owned that property had been dead for 3 years. My Uncle Bill confirmed that. The land was still in his name, but had not been distributed to a family member. It was just kind of out there on its own. He didn't have any sons or any relatives that lived anywhere remotely near where we lived, and no one, as far as the sheriff knew, had access to the property. How those guys got there was beyond me. We went home and went to Bill's house. Bill's uncle was on the porch talking to Bill's dad, and we told him everything that we had seen all over again, and he kept shaking his head, wondering who those guys were. He asked us if we were being on the up and up about seeing things that we had seen, and we assured him that we were not making any of it up. The next day, Bill's uncle went back to the property and walked over to the guy's place next door. It was clearly apparent that someone had either cut the original cable or lock and replaced it or both with something new. Bill's uncle was positive that the old lock had been tarnished with age and rain and the elements. This was a shiny new lock and a fairly new chain across the gravel road. He followed that up with the police, but that was the last we heard of anything. Of course, we had given the sheriff a full description of the truck and the guys, but again, I don't think anyone was taking it seriously other than Bill's uncle and father. We were told that week that the property was off limits to us unless there were adults around. I mean, we were teenagers and could handle ourselves, but that decision was made and that was it. Some nights, I'll be out in my backyard having a campfire or even inside watching my grandkids playing in my living room. My mind will drift back to think about who those two guys were why those little kids' clothes were bloody and stuffed into the trunk of an old car. Those are the nights I usually have nightmares. Hey gang, thanks for listening to this episode of Uncle Josh's True Scary Stories. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have a true scary story of any nature that you would like to hear narrated on my channel, email UncleJoshTrueScaryStories@gmail.com. I read them all. Please like, share, and subscribe to my channel if you haven't done so already, and make sure you hit the notification button to make sure that you know every time I upload. To save on data costs, find me on all of your favorite podcasting platforms. Follow me on social media, all the links to that are in the description below, as well as links to the artists for my thumbnails, as well as the music I share with my episodes. Until next time, be excellent to each other, and remember, be wary of things that go bump in the night. It could be anything, a ghost, a monster, or the guy next door.